Hey, welcome back. This is the Culture Implosion Podcast, the podcast where we talk about films and culture sometimes, and we try and dig deep, dissect what they mean, give you some insight as to what was going on at the time. Also, this is the first episode where we have that name, so that's exciting. We'll try it out, see how it goes. Today we're talking about Hedwig and the Angry Inch. I asked Stephanie what her favorite movie was, and she said it was this one. Hedwig and the Angry Inch from 2001. So, we're going to talk about that. And even though the movie was made 18 years ago, I think it's pretty pertinent for today. It talks a lot about gender, perceptions about gender, how gender is fluid. And it's sort of timely also because Neil Patrick Harris recently has been in the lead role on Hedwig and the Angry Inch on Broadway, I believe, in the play version, which came before the movie, but now he's in it. So take a listen. Let me know what you think. Okay, thanks. Without further ado, here is the discussion about Hedwig from 2001. Maybe. I'm gonna... You're already in a call. Okay! Hey, it's going.
Oh, yeah, I see the live now.
Yeah. Hey, Stephanie!
Hey, Teeth!
Let's talk about Hedwig and the Angry Inch, the movie, not the Broadway show,
right? No, but it was based on. So I don't know if you looked it up or anything. The movie came out when I was like 19 or 20. So this was like 2000, something like that. But originally,
2001. It was 2000.
Okay. All right. Yeah. But originally it was an off-Broadway show. Like they had it in this little theater, and it was just basically a series of monologues in between the songs. And then it evolved into the movie, and then it evolved into the Broadway show.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Did you see the play before it was a movie?
No.
Because you're like, I consider you to be more of an authority on musicals and like and stuff like this, because you do what are your drama nerd credentials?
I've been doing, I mean, it's community theater, so hold on. Okay. It's not exactly like a big credential there, but you know, I've been doing community theater for like 15 years.
That's still, I mean, that's more than me.
Yeah.
So relatively speaking, you have the credentials and I do not.
Right. It's funny though, because yeah, I would say on the whole, I don't really like musicals.
Oh, okay.
Which is weird. Or like, I'm very picky about the musicals that I do like. So maybe I can count on one hand the number of musicals that I do like. There's like, tons of others that I haven't seen or I haven't heard the soundtrack of. So I guess I can't really judge, but
yeah. Well, I think that you're... Because you do like Ren Faire type stuff, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And I just consider you to be a more publicly dramatic person than me. Let's put it that way. Like, because like you did like bar, didn't you lead like bar trivia for a while? Right. Yeah. Am I making that up?
Yeah, I did that. No, I did that for like a year, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Or it might have been 2 years. Yeah, it wasn't very long.
Is it okay for me to mention?
Every week.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that's a lot. That's
yeah.
That's putting on a show.
Yeah.
And can I mention the LARPing in here, or is that not okay to mention?
Yeah, no, I don't care. Some okay. people get really weird about it and they don't want to talk about it. And it's this big secret thing because if people knew that they did this, oh my God, what would they think of them? And it's like, I don't care.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
People get really like, people like to look down on LARPing as like, oh, it's like the lowest echelon of nerddom. But like,
oh, really? I did not mean to insinuate that. I did not well, no. mean that.
No, you didn't. But like other okay. people have, it's like, oh, well, they would play tabletop. They would play D&D, but they would never LARP. And it's like, we are doing the same thing. Only we play rock, paper, scissors instead of rolling dice. Like, it's not like, don't get on a high horse here.
Yeah. You know? and go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, you know, we like might costume, but really, at least my friends, we only costume for like big events because we're part of this big international organization. But like when it's just okay. us, we don't care. Like, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. No, no. It's, I mean, and for if anybody is listening to this, period. That's my full sentence. If anyone,
just
no.
If
for like LARPing is live action role playing, right? That's
oh,
what that stands
yeah,
for.
That's helpful if you don't know.
What yeah. Means. So that and the takeaway from that, the reason I mentioned it is just to say, like you do acting type things in your life. So
yes,
I consider you to be more of an expert on a musical, a movie that's based on a play, than me or than a large majority of my friends that I've talked
okay.
to.
Okay. And so you're building yeah. up to like, I broke your trust.
No, not at all. Not okay. at all. You're referencing things that happened off episode, but I just mentioned that there were parts that I didn't enjoy, but we'll get into it.
Okay.
If anybody listens to this podcast and has listened to anything before, like, this is full of spoilers. Like, the way to use it is to watch the movie and then come listen to this. So,
yes.
So I don't want to waste a whole lot of time, like, trying to recreate the plot of the movie.
Right. And setup too, like, you asked me, like, to give you one of my favorite movies.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, so for this, for yeah, me, for is sure. one of my favorite movies. And, like, there were others I could have picked, but, you know. This was one that obviously you hadn't watched, and so, yeah, that was part of the reason why we chose this movie in particular, not, you know.
Right, yeah, like, it's timely only in the sense that, I asked you what your favorite movie was, and I said, hey, let's talk about that.
And it's timely in that, yes, the musical has become a big thing, especially like with Neil Patrick Harris being in it, and mm-hmm. I think Darren Criss and Taye Diggs, I think, was in it too.
I don't know those people, but
yeah, they, okay. well, you know, so it had a big run of fairly famous like actors. And okay. I know there's a drag queen, Mimi M. First, who has been doing a production of it too. So okay. it's, you know, it's lasted for, what is it, 20 years now. But it's, you know, had a resurgence lately. So.
Okay. Yeah. And so just the skeleton of the plot is that, what was his name at the beginning? Hansel is this kid who yes. grows up in East Germany. I can't remember if they reference that he's gay before he meets the officer that is looking at him over the wall.
They do. It's part they do. Of one okay. of the little animations, and so I guess if you're not really paying right. attention to it, then
I was paying. That was a dig.
No, that wasn't a dig because it's. I mean, so the phrase that he uses in the little animation is. Talking about all the men who have touched me in my life, who has touched me the most? And
right.
then that's when you get into the point about the father, you know. Anyway, right. but bare bone skeleton, yes. He lives yeah. in East Germany. He's trying, like, he meets this guy. He wants to get out, but the only way he can get out is if he becomes a woman.
Yeah, and so the officer sort of halfway forces him, halfway kind of just convinces him, and he has the sex change reluctantly. The sex change is botched.
Yes.
And thus the title of the movie, The Angry Inch.
Yes.
So Hansel is now Hedwig, and she moves with the guy to America, and he promptly finds another androgynous boy to be with, and then she meets
the day the wall falls down too. Like she's
the
like,
day the wall falls down. Yeah,
right. Yeah. So it's like, you know, great. I did all this for nothing now.
Right. Yeah. I think that sensibility is a lot in the movie. The like tragically funny. It's so tragic, but it's also funny at the same time, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And somewhere along the way, she meets Tommy Gnosis. I know that wasn't his name. Like she gave
his
him name that
was
name.
Tommy Speck.
Oh, okay. Originally. Yeah, yeah. So she meets Tommy Speck, and they start writing songs together, and have a romantic relationship. He can't handle her. She never says in the movie that she's like. She never labels herself in the movie.
Right.
Right? Like she never says she's transgender, she never says she's a woman or so anyway, she Tommy Gnosis can't handle whatever she has going on, the botched sex change operation in front.
Right.
So it's sort of like a weird back and forth. Anyway, he starts using the songs that they wrote together and is getting acclaim, and meanwhile she's playing with her band Hedwig and the Angry Inch in a series of bilge water restaurants.
Right, which is how the whole story is told. Because basically they're following Tommy Gnosis on his tour because he stole all the songs. And I guess as a way to try to prove that she wrote them or try to, you know, whatever. So they follow along and play at the nearby restaurant.
Yeah, the bilge water chain of restaurants,
right?
Yeah. With that's a funny name. And so yeah, then it's a hard movie to recap even just briefly because the way it's told in like you said, we're getting the narrative from her in those restaurants as she's following Tommy, and she's doing flashbacks, which are a combination of songs and just straight up like retellings of what happened to her past.
Well, and the ending gets weird. The ending does get weird because there is this confrontation between Tommy and Hedwig, and they get caught together. So like, oh look, she's been telling the truth the whole time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But then it also gets into a confrontation of like, I guess, like facing herself and facing how she's been acting towards people, and you know, and then the ending is weird. I will admit that it's like really metaphorical and really.
Oh, sure, know. Sure. I think because you know that I didn't like parts of this, I'm not gonna like ask you to defend why you like this movie at all.
No, like, I don't feel like I have to. Like, I
okay,
like the
okay.
And if you don't like it, that's fine. Like,
yeah, yeah,
that's
cool.
Fine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Why? So. What you said, this is one of your favorites or your favorite movie.
Yeah.
What makes this your favorite movie?
The song, I mean, the songs, it is a musical. So I love the songs. I love the soundtrack. I listen to the soundtrack all the time. Still 20 years later.
Songs are great. Songs are really good. Yeah.
Knowing that I knew that you didn't like it, part of me was like thinking like, well, why do I like this movie? And part of it might have to be where I was in my life when the movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like 20 or 21 or something. I was getting to the end of like college, and that's the point where you're like, what the hell am I doing with my life? And there's a lot of like, I guess, like navel gazing and self introspection and like trying to find yourself, which I think is like what the movie is about, is basically like her trying to really like reconcile like who she is and what her life is about. And, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I can totally see that. Yeah.
So like, I think that's the connection, is that, you know, like, oh yeah, that's you, like when you're going through the same thing, you kind of have that like connection with the movie.
Right. Yeah. Like there are movies that hit me in the same way. Like I think if you're a certain kind of person and you just leave high school and are like in college and trying to be like, you seek out things that will be complex and you can read into them. And like, for me, I really got into, on the polar opposite side of this, like I was like super into Fight Club because it was like edgy and weird and like Chuck Palahniuk and stuff.
For me, the other one was Reality Bites.
I don't think I've ever seen that. I gotta watch that.
That one, because it's these four friends, they're all like post-graduation and they're just lost. Mm-hmm. And that was what I was going through then at the time too, when I saw it, because I hadn't really seen it when it came out. I watched it and then I was like, oh my God, that's me. That's me on the television screen. So
Yeah. I can totally see that. I think this movie, I think we maybe just to do the big reveal, maybe I can tell you the aspects of this movie that it's not that I, well, I guess I didn't. Yeah. Let's talk about the aspects of the movie that I just did not like.
Sure.
I'll just keep saying like, why didn't I like it? What I did like were the songs. Those were great. It helps that Bob Mould played guitar on some of those songs, at least so I read. And Bob Mould's amazing. I'm a big Bob Mould fan.
Okay, I didn't know that. So. I knew the band in the movie is the guy who wrote all the songs, Stephen Trask. That was his band.
Yeah. And apparently Bob Mould, he's either on the recording. I was trying to find where I read it. He's either on the recording or he has played live in some of the shows. But okay. I think he's on the recording, if I remember reading it correctly. I was trying to go back through and find it, and I couldn't find it.
The music, I prefer the music from the movie better than any Broadway recordings that I've heard. I love Neil Patrick Harris. He's funny and he's fantastic and he's a talented like singer, but it's too Broadway for me. Like, it's too clean. It's too enunciated. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It just got too cleaned up. But I'm like, no, I want the like dirtier rock side of it. So
yeah. It's like legitimately good glam or like punk, like some weird mixture of glam and punk songs in there, with even some like prog rock stuff with the Play-Doh or Aristotle man woman song, whatever that was called. What is that one? Where it's like two halves of the same thing.
Oh God, it's like the opening song.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Well, we did great homework.
Yeah. Well, I bet I have it here, like on, if I just pull up my albums. In the meantime, we can talk about something else.
Well, so gosh, I was struggling with how to think about this. So the guy in the movie,
it's Tear Me Down, just so everybody knows. It's the very Tear first Me song. Down. Tear Me
okay.
Down.
Okay. Is that it?
Right. It's right.
Okay.
Talking about the bridge between two worlds. Yeah. From East Berlin to Junction City, you know, like, yeah. Yeah, that's it.
No, the other one.
I'm gonna see another one.
Yeah, the one that's about I just had it up. Where are the songs? Turn me down, yeah, maybe it was. Anyway, there's a song in there that's about that's references like some Platonic or Aristotle myth thing where people are searching for their other half, and that's the song that I was thinking.
Oh, that! Oh, yeah. It's Origin of Love. It's the
yes,
the
Origin of Love.
Four arms and four legs. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, Origin of Love. Origin of Love. That was the one that I thought was kind of prog rocky. Okay, so this was like a big ball of wax for me to try and figure out. So John Cameron Mitchell, right, is the guy who basically, with Stephen Trask, but it's primarily John Cameron Mitchell, who wrote and I think directed this too, right?
Yes, I think so.
So I think just watching the movie and like taking it as it is, it's like, oh, this is cool. It brings up like some themes about like the fluidity of gender, which I think is great. And questions of gender and sexuality and stuff and how fluid it is. And I think all of that stuff is cool and great. When I started to think about it a little bit deeper though, is there, let me just pose it as a question. Is it a problem for somebody who is, I think John Cameron Mitchell is gay. So
he is. Yeah.
Yeah. So is it a problem for a gay man to represent it? I know she didn't identify as transgender in the movie, but like it's in my mind, I would think it's close enough. Like, is it okay for somebody to portray a transgendered person and sort of use the, like, I felt like he was using the, like, it, almost using it as, like, body horror to a certain degree, as, like, shock value to, like, the way they described her like, botched surgery. It just seems like, I don't know. Like it caused me to be like, is it okay for this guy to do that when I don't even know if I have a fully formed idea. It just seems like it could be problematic.
It could be problematic. Yeah, for sure. And I don't know, like in conversations where you hear about, like, not in the same context, but you hear about, you know, like, well, straight actors, you know, cisgender people should not play trans people. You know, like, I don't ever hear criticisms of this movie. And I don't know if it's because, like, Hansel does not want to be transgender. Like, that is not part of their identity. That is not anything to begin with. And it's like, it's just something done to get him out of, you know, communist, like, whatever. Sure. Like, you know, like, yeah, getting him out of East Germany. So it was just, like, a means to an end, basically.
Yes, and I think, like, I get it within the way that the story is written. Like, I totally understand that. Like, right. if we're just judging the box as far as how it was created, but I think the fact that it's used as a device, you know, I'm not sure exactly what it, like, if this movie came out today, because the politics back 2001 are way different than the politics today, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know what, you know, 2019 people would, how something that just came out in the box office and it's like sort of using this kind of like back and forth about like it's going for shock value, like I said, but also the portrayal of Hedwig, like when Hansel is Hedwig, like she's not, there's many parts where she's not a sympathetic character at all.
Right.
Like she, I'm thinking of when she's like smacking the guy in the face and for good reason, like the Tommy Gnosis character was making her feel bad about her body and herself and stuff, and
right,
she's getting,
like,
hit in the face.
Other times when it's just like when she rips up Yitzhak's passport.
Yes,
for
oh,
no reason.
God, that
yeah.
was.
Well, not for
I
no
was
reason,
so
but for,
uncomfortable.
It's not a good reason to rip up. So, like, you should never do
no.
that to begin with. But you know, yeah.
Oh my God, yeah, that was like. That was tough to watch. I mean, it's good acting, and the fact that it was so, that I felt so uncomfortable watching it, like, that speaks, like, a lot to the writing and, like, the acting. Like, that, the fact that it was that affecting is great, but I'm just taking a step back and saying, like, thematically, like, I don't know, like, are they trying to say, like, this is how transgendered people are or something?
On that point, I would argue, like, so here's the thing, like, yeah. Yay, we want more representation of different genders, of different things like that in the media. We want more representation of transgender people, but they can't all be good representations. So,
I agree. Yeah.
You know, there are people who would watch it and go, like, oh, are all transgender people that way? Or are people going to watch it and go, yeah, that person's transgender and they're a fucking asshole, but the two don't have to do anything to do with each other.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Fair point. That's a fair point. Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, there are some people, there are cisgender people who are just fucking assholes, and it's not because of, you know, their gender or anything. It's just
right.
How they are.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's a really good point. Yeah. You wouldn't watch, I wouldn't watch a movie and say, oh, well, that straight guy, are they trying to say, they're trying to make some commentary about him being straight. Yeah. That's a very, very good point. That's a very good point. Okay. Yeah.
But I can see your point about the, like, is it being used as body horror again, you know, with the resurgence of the musical? I mean, that's just within the last, like, year or two, and it hasn't been a big issue. So I don't know if it's because in the context of the story, people are okay with it.
Uh-huh.
Or
uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah,
but I could be wrong. But, you know, you would think that if it were, like, a major thing, that they would, like, shut the musical down, or they would do something, you know, like, so.
Yeah, if there was an outcry.
There may be people who are upset, but it hasn't gotten, like, major attention for it.
Right, right. Okay. I mean, that was the big thing where I was like, oh, gosh, I'm having trouble enjoying this movie. And it was that big question for me. So. Yeah. Setting that part aside, just the fact that it just makes me go, like, I, you know, like, it makes me go, I'm not sure if I can sign off on this. So if I put that to one side, like, I think it's the way it's shot is really cool. Like, it was shot for $6 million, like, at a time when a comparable musical was, maybe not comparable, but another musical from that time was, like, Moulin Rouge, which was, like, $50 million.
Oh, which is Baz Luhrmann, and, of course, like, over the top, but...
Yeah.
I mean, still, it's hard to find movies that are that cheap, which is still scary that it's cheap, but, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I looked up the box office stuff just because I'm interested in how much these movies make.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm, it looks like in the entire year of 2001, when it was out in the theater, so mm-hmm. the movie cost $3 million or $6 million, it only made $3 million in the box office.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I think it became a big, like, cult following after the fact.
Oh, I totally agree. I totally agree. Yeah. Yeah. And then I guess I was looking up what John Cameron Mitchell did next, and I guess he did Short Bus next. Did you ever watch that? Or
No, I never watched it. The only thing that I know that I've seen him in is he was in Girls on HBO.
Okay.
Hannah's editor. Or something like that. Yeah. So he made some cameo appearances on that show. But that's the only other thing I'd seen of him, really.
The weird thing, I'm going to Google it really quick. The weird, to make sure I'm not getting it wrong. The weird thing about Short Bus that I think I remember is that he wanted there to be actual sex in the movie.
Okay.
Like, he wanted to film people actually having sex, because it was supposed to be all about, like, what it's actually like and what sex actually does to a relationship. So not like, not the way it's portrayed in movies and not the way it's portrayed on the other side in like porn and stuff, but like what it actually does. But I think he, I think they were supposed to do that. Maybe I heard that wrong, because this little quote I see says, in the old days when you couldn't show sex in film, directors like Hitchcock had metaphors for sex. When you can show more realistic sex, sex itself can be a metaphor for parts of other characters' lives. Anyway, so then he went on to direct some episodes of Glow, I think more recently, from what I've heard.
So. I liked that, so I didn't, I'll have to go back and pay attention.
Yeah. Okay.
Actually, there was actually something in my rewatching that I found problematic.
Oh, okay.
That I don't. Yeah. So we referenced it very slightly, and it's like, it's the barest minute in the movie, and it's in the intro when he's talking about his childhood, and he says, you know, the whole lots of men have touched me in my life. Who can I say touched me the most? And then he gets to his father. And
oh, right. Yeah.
In the way it's portrayed in the scene that follows, it's insinuated that his dad molested him.
Yes. That's what I gleaned from that little bit too.
So my problem with this is, and again, this could be, we could construe this a different way, but with Milo Yiannopoulos and the whole thing about pedophilia being a regular thing in the gay community. And I don't know if you've ever heard someone say this, but I have heard people say this, you know, small town in the South, that if someone's gay, oh, they must have been touched when they were a child. They must have been molested. They must have been. So for that to be part of it, that kind of made me go, oh, well, that sucks that has to be part of the storyline. But I'm sure, anybody, you could say that, there are cis people, there are straight people, there are, you know, any on the range of sexuality and gender and blah, 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 who were molested as a child. But that's not why they are the way they are.
Yes. Yes. I agree with you. Yeah.
You know, you're like, yes, it just so happens that, yes, he was molested, and yes, he happens to be gay. So one does not necessarily cause the other, but it just in light of certain things like that, it did make me kind of go like, oh, well, that's a shame.
Yeah. I still come back to I can't tell if I removed the shock value stuff from this movie, if people would still talk about it quite as much as they do. Do you think that this movie survives on those little things? It's like, oh, look, it's about, they're dropping this hint about child molestation. And then there's this other thing, the way they talk about the botch, you know, sex job and this and that. Do people watch this movie just for shock value?
I don't think so. Because I think for the test for this, maybe say what if you took out all those things? What if you took out the father molestation? Because again, it was a minute in a movie. What if it was just the father was a GI and he went back home? You know, so he's still being raised by his mother. So boom, you take that one out. Or what if, what if it's not a botched sex job, operation? What if it was successful, but, you know, it still fucked him up because it wasn't his choice? Then he still has those issues with the relationships and things like that, because it's not, obviously, even though Hansel still, puts forth the image of Hedwig, in the end, you see that that's not really who they were the whole time, because, you know, he didn't bother getting top surgery. Obviously he didn't have the money either, but, you know, didn't get top surgery, didn't do, you know, so didn't follow through with everything. And, you know, so say it was the successful bottom surgery. If they never went through with the top surgery, if they never did that other thing, then there would still be issues there because people would still get weirded out by it. Like,
yes,
you know, if they're not expecting it. Yeah, then it's, they're still going to cause the problems. So I think you could take those out and it would still be, and change the script, and it would still be a movie that people would watch because the themes are still there. Like the same, you know, issues with relationship because of issues with yourself and, you know.
Yeah. I think so. I tend to think you're right. And the reason I keep saying I think so with hesitancy is because I should have given this caveat at the beginning. Like, I don't watch musicals really, and I'm a straight white dude. So it's very much me like approaching this with trying to approach this with humility and go like, I am trying to understand this and not at all assume that this is like, that I have any, you know, authority in this matter at all. Right?
Oh, right. And I have several like trans friends who could totally listen to this and they're like, what the fuck were you talking about?
send it to them and see what they say.
Like, hey, if you guys can, like, if you've watched the movie and if you haven't watched the movie, go watch the movie first and then listen to this and tell us, like, are we totally off the mark? Do we not understand? Yes. Are we just dumb cis straight people?
Yes. Probably. Right. Right. Probably yes. I found a quote from this New York Times film review that I thought was really, it's funny. It's a funny quote. This came out in 2001. Okay. And the film reviewer said, "The fact that the movie exists at all reminds us that as much as we may be living in a t-shirt and baseball cap world of macho men and jiggling babes, it is also a post-Freudian world of better living through surgery and chemistry, a place peopled with flexing drag kings and slithery, oh God, this word is not great. Slithery she-males.
And
everything in between." I think he was saying he liked the movie in that
it was portraying a slice of life that you don't see. It was just really poorly worded. I don't know. That's hard to say that that's a positive review.
That was like one little quote from it. And I feel like John Cameron Mitchell made the movie, and if he would have read that, he would be like, yes, I accomplished what I wanted to do. This like New York Times film reviewer has no idea what he's seeing, and he's trying to like make sense of it.
Right.
And maybe we're doing what John Cameron Mitchell wants us to do with that movie, is to be like you said, two cis straight white folks coming at it being like, oh, I think is this what they meant? Is this okay?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what else can we say about it?
I don't know. You said you liked the music, and you said you liked the overall story.
I did. Yeah. And I really like how it was shot. Like, it had a 90s aesthetic to me, even though it was shot in like 2001 or probably, you know, it came out in 2001, but there were certain ways that the camera operated and like the vibrancy of the colors and stuff. Like, there was lots of like shots of only people's faces, like really up close. Reminded me of Raising Arizona, sort of. Like,
okay,
like that movie is very similar with the way it's shot too. It's in Raising Arizona, they're doing it for like comedic effect so that it feels like more cartoony. And I think they're doing the same thing here, but one reviewer I listened to a podcast from this one reviewer, and they said that they think that they did that in the movie because it was on so, they were making it on so little funds that they couldn't reveal that they weren't in the right staging.
Oh, you know? Okay.
So it's like, well, we don't need to edit this too much if we just get like a super intense close up of this guy's face, right?
Right. There. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked the that Bilgewater stuff was really funny, and I can't remember the jokes offhand, but the little quippy one-liners that Hedwig had as she's like performing,
as she's monologuing, there are a lot of like, if you were not paying attention, it's a throwaway line almost, you know, it's
uh-huh.
just kind of like a joke and then past it already.
Yeah, yeah. And there's, you can tell like when she's in those Bilgewater things and like interacting with people who are just like trying to eat their food, you know?
yeah.
It sort of reminded me, like I've been to not a ton of drag shows, but I've been to like several. Uh-huh. And I have to get myself prepared for them because I know that I have like, I exude like nerdy straight white guy. So,
so it's a big spotlight of like, please come pick on me.
Please come pick on me. Yes.
Right.
Yep. And I didn't know that was going to happen the first one that I went to. Like, I wish whoever brought me to that first one, I can't remember who it was. It was somewhere in Florida in Gainesville. I wish they would have told me, but so every subsequent one I've gone to, I'm like, okay, I go knowing full well that if anybody is going to get picked on, it's going to be me with right. like skinny, skinny white dude with like big plastic, you know, frame glasses on. I know I'm going to get picked on, and I don't know that they did a good job of recreating like what that feeling is like. I remember in the moment, and maybe that was very small, but that's what that made me think of.
Side like total side note, has nothing to do with movie. Did you take money to tip the drag performers?
Did I take money?
Yeah. Did you like bring money with you to tip the performers?
I can't.
Did
remember.
You know that that's a thing? That is a thing, by the way.
Yes. I knew that it was a thing. Yes.
I feel like, even though I feel like it's common knowledge, like if you go see a burlesque performance, if you go see a drag show, you bring lots of dollar bills or fives or whatever you want, you know, to tip the performers. But I have been with groups of people where they didn't, where I was the only one, and I was like, whoa, what is going on here?
Yeah, the one I went to most recently had kind of a high ticket price.
Okay.
So I think I probably didn't have that much. I probably brought like $5 with me or something, but to even get in the door, it was pretty expensive. So, yeah, I don't know. That's not, I'm probably letting you down, but I also am not one that's going to run
but
up.
But as long as you had something. I mean,
as far as
I'm remembering, nobody else in my group had anything, or like maybe one other person. And it was just, I don't know. It was strange.
Were they all clueless just about like what you're supposed to do at the thing? Or
I don't know. I didn't talk to anybody about it. I didn't call them out. I didn't ask it. I mean, if they're listening and they figure it out, this is probably you. I don't want to just like call the person out. I mean, that might be very ambitious and hopeful that anybody beyond like one person is going to listen to this, but in case they do.
right. You don't want to call them out.
Right. I don't want to like embarrass them, because it might've just been like, oh, they hadn't been to a drag show before, so they just didn't realize, or, you know, it was like, or yeah, it was that they just didn't bring enough money, or, you know, it was something they didn't realize until we got there.
Yeah.
So sorry, total derailment of the conversation, has nothing to do with the movie.
No,
it's talking about drag shows.
Yeah, no, I think it applies. So you think maybe a spiritual cousin to this movie would be re Reality Bites for your own existence, right? Like
Yes,
not but okay. I'm gonna have
like
to go watch
and
that one.
totally not. I mean, it's first of all, it's very 90s. It's starring Janeane Garofalo, Winona Ryder, and Ethan Hawke. So that alone makes it like super 90s. But yeah, it's the feeling of trying to figure out yourself and trying to figure out your place in the world. Is a major theme for both. So,
Yeah.
like, I would say the two movies are nothing alike other than that.
Yeah, that is the through line. That is the theme.
Yeah.
Which I think for me, like I said, Fight Club. I remember there was a time in my life where I was really, that it's so cheesy, where I was really into Good Will Hunting for a similar reason.
I
Just
have
like,
never seen that movie.
oh, really? I
Yeah,
don't
and
know.
part of
I
me
don't.
wears that as a badge of honor. I don't know why. I'm sure it's a good movie, and they didn't they win an Oscar or something for it? And
They
like,
yeah they did. It's I think the reason to watch I think the reason to watch that movie I think the reason to watch that movie is because you see Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, like that was their movie, like they came up with all of that, and
and that was before
somehow
they were famous. That was like their
yeah Ben
major
Affleck.
entrance into like stardom.
Yeah, Ben Affleck had been in, I believe he had been in some, maybe one Kevin Smith movie at
Oh
the
yeah, he was
time.
in Mallrats.
But I think, so that would be the only reason I would say go back and watch it, is because if you come at it with that mindset of like, okay, I'm watching this, like picture yourself in your 20s and you're trying to figure stuff out, and watch it with that mindset and seeing them at sort of the beginning of their careers. And I mean, it's by Gus Van Sant. Like he's a really good director, so it's shot well. There's some good one-liners in it. You get to see what's his name, Robin Williams, you know, do some good dramatic acting. But all right, well,
Yeah,
I
I feel like age and mindset plays a lot into movies sometimes. I was
definitely.
thinking about that today. Like, you know, again, one reason that I again may ha not that you didn't like it, but that I may have liked it better and whatever is because of the age I was when I watched it. Like the Goonies. You saw it when you were a kid, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you watch it now and you still love it. And or I do.
Yeah.
There are some movies that you watch from when you were a kid that haven't aged well and you don't like it. But like I know I had a friend who had never seen The Goonies and they watched it and they were like, eh, it was okay.
Right.
So
Right.
yeah, no, yeah, like it's different when you're coming at it from a different age because you don't have the same perspective.
It's
It's not, you know.
It is so hard to overcome the nostalgia barrier when it comes to like evaluating movies or books or TV or music. Like, it's so hard for me personally to overcome that, to say, is this thing legitimately good, or am I just hyper focusing on the things that made it good or the situation that was surrounding it when I saw it? For me, it's really difficult. And similarly, it's really difficult for me to forget terrible things that happen that make me dislike a movie. Like I got into a huge argument with somebody when I watched Tree of Life. Have you ever seen that?
Oh, was that the one with Hugh Jackman and Rachel
No.
Weisz?
No. You're thinking of The Fountain. Tree of
Oh,
Life.
yeah, okay.
Tree of Life is it's a Terrence Malick movie. It's like really abstract and like weird and cool. But I got in this huge argument with somebody, just an enormous argument that had like ripple effects. And now I can't watch, like, I just can't watch that movie because it's so
So,
closely tied with that argument.
the argument which had nothing to do with the movie.
No, it had nothing to do with the movie. It just happened right after the movie.
Right. So it's like a it's like PTSD almost.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I own the movie. Yeah. I own the movie and I enjoy it. And I can't watch it.
I don't know if I've ever had anything like that, but like, as far as like nostalgia goes, I mean, the, Captain Marvel just came out.
Yes.
You saw it, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I did.
And, the 90s soundtrack. I mean, obviously it was set in the 90s. It was set in like 1995.
Right.
And I like the storyline anyway, you know, I do like, the story, but, yeah, part of me's like, man, now that you say that, like, did I like it or did I just like it? Cause I like all those 90s. Like, I still listen to all of that music.
That's what you said on, you posted that on Facebook or something. You were like, does it qualify as nostalgia if I still actively listen to all of those songs or something like that? Right.
Yeah. And it's, is it? I don't know. I mean, technically, I guess it does because, you know, like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. All right. Well, I think we did it. Did we do it justice?
I think so. Yeah. I just looked at how long we've been talking, and I will be surprised if anybody makes it through the hour, 45 minutes.
They will. Riveting stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, all right. We'll talk about another movie again.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
Sounds good.
Bye. Cool. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you want to make a suggestion about a movie we should watch and talk about, shoot me an email, culture.implosion@gmail.com. Or I think you don't even need the dot in there. I think Gmail automatically accounts for it, so you could just type in cultureimplosion@gmail.com. And if you like the episode, let me know. Suggest it to your friends. Don't listen to other podcasts that tell you that you need to rate a podcast especially on iTunes, because the iTunes formula doesn't matter. It's not based on likes, it's based on subscriptions. So, you can review this podcast if you want to, but ultimately, subscribe. Tell your friends if you want. Okay, thanks. Bye.